This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Talk us through this new model that was released by Anthropic. Why did it cause so much disruption yesterday?
Yeah, hi, Jemana. Yeah, I mean, you could argue that Anthropic's having a bit of a deep seek moment, if you remember from a year or two back, really disrupting the AI market with these co-work tools. It started with the Claude code, which kind of helped coders to essentially develop their software quicker and in a more automated way. Then they kind of transformed that into kind of co-work, which applies across a whole broad range of productivity tools, such as Excel. And now the latest twist in that is they brought out a specific automation tool for legal services, and that really disrupted a lot of the big kind of professional information service names, just say like RELX, for example. But I think that's just kind of sparking broader fears that companies like Anthropic that really focus on business productivity tools.
What are the limits of using AI to help run a legal practice? There is much discussion about what an AI future might look like, but with the rapid development of AI tools, the future may be now. The hot AI service of the moment is Claude AI, which is targeting various verticals, including software coding and legal services. My guest this week argues that the general purpose service is already sufficiently powerful to have a transformative effect on legal practice. Zach Shapiro is a New York lawyer and founder of the Raines Law Firm. He's a Yale law grad, and before starting the firm, he clerked in the U.S. federal courts and practiced with Davis Polk in New York. He recently wrote a trio of articles, I'll link to them in the show notes, that may excite some and terrify others. The article that went viral is called The Claude Native Law Firm, How I Actually Practice Law with AI in 2026. Zach has a fascinating story to tell that demonstrates remarkable innovation and a willingness to challenge the conventional wisdom on AI and legal services. Please note that this episode has been accredited by the Law Society of Ontario for 45 minutes of professionalism hours. Members of the LSO can apply listening to this podcast to their CLE requirements. This episode becomes part of what I've called the Law Bites Professionalism Pack, series of Law Bites podcast episodes that have all received LSO accreditation for professionalism hours. I'll link to the page with the other episodes in the show notes, but they include episode 242 with Sukesh Kamra on law firm adoption of AI and innovative technologies, episode 233 with Abdi Aidid on AI, the law, and the future of legal practice, episode 175 with Amy Salazin on the benefits and risks of AI to the legal profession. Episode 111, the story behind JusTech, how three University of Ottawa law students created a technology compliance solution for privacy breach rules. And episode 12, the past, present, and future of free and open access to law. In other words, just listening to the Law Bites podcast can get you the professionalism hours that you need. In fact, the full three-hour requirement for the year can be had through the four AI-related episodes, Kamra, Aidid, Salazin, and now Zach Shapiro. And with that, on to my conversation with Zach Shapiro. Zach, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's a real pleasure to have you join. You know, at a time when there's a lot of hand-wringing, fear and no shortage, I think, of skepticism about AI in the context of legal services, you're offering up a model, I think, for really innovative thinking and opportunity. I want to get into how you use it, how you think about it within the context of the practice of law and AI. But before we do that, I want to just tell the listeners a little bit about your practice.
For sure. Well, my firm is called Raines LLP. We are a sort of corporate transactional law firm, mostly representing startups, some investors as well. And we have three practice areas. We do sort of general corporate work or fractional general counsel services for startups that typically don't have full-time in-house counsel, although occasionally do. We do transactional work, which is mostly venture deals and some M&A. And then we do regulatory work, sort of ad hoc regulatory work for clients, but really there we sort of specialize in tech verticals that I'm personally interested in, which are mostly crypto, AI, and telehealth.
Okay, those are some of the same areas that I'm interested in. So you've been prolific, I think, in writing about some of these issues. The piece that got my attention, and as I understand it, maybe millions of others based on the kind of numbers, was about your use of Claude AI, what you describe as a Claude native firm. I want to talk about how you use Claude, but first, I know that many in the legal profession are always being hit with different kinds of services that are AI legal specific, Harvey and others. So why Claude? Why not one of those other services?
For sure. So I think the AI forward offerings in the sort of legal sector tend to fall into one of two camps, both of which I'll be honest, I'm pretty skeptical of. On the one hand, you've got legal tech firms, so Harvey, Legora, Spellbook, et cetera, that are selling sort of wrappers around large language models. Large language models being sort of the modern version of AI, in ChatGPT and Claude that many of your listeners will be familiar with. My view is that we've reached an inflection point really over the past few months where LLMs themselves have gotten so powerful that anything that gets between you and the LLM is not only going to be sort of unnecessary and not something you want to pay for, but actually deeply counterproductive in terms of sort of unleashing your capabilities as a lawyer. And that's true both because of the power of technology, it's also true just because of how modern LLMs work. I'm someone who's like, to be honest, very bad at learning new tools. Being in the startup space, I have clients, constantly trying to get me to use Carta and Pulley and Asana and Jira and all of these, horrible things. That's really not me. And I can tell you, as someone who's just very bad at tech products and very bad at tools, AI is different in that you just speak to it in English. And I'm sure we'll get, later in the specifics, but the real secret to this is speaking to the AI both in a detailed and specific manner. And that's something that lawyers are good at. And so you really don't need what, in the tech world they would call sort of an opinionated wrapper that like gives you a menu of eight options of how to interact with the AI. That's really the wrong model. You should be just speaking with the AI itself, and letting the AI sort of suggest what capabilities are going to be most useful for you. So that's sort of bucket one, is the legal wrapper companies. I don't think that in principle, you couldn't create sort of a AI, a legal specific AI software product, but it would really have to be oriented differently. That's something I'm thinking about right now. But where most of them are getting it wrong is that they are narrowing the AI too much. On the other end, you have these sort of recent crop of like Y Combinator backed, what are calling themselves sort of AI first law firms or AI assisted law firms. And again, there, I don't think there's anything wrong in principle with that idea. Right. I've called my own firm the sort of Claude native law firm. Where I start to worry about those offerings is that when you sort of take venture money to do a law firm, when you really lean heavily into sort of flat fee pricing, there is a sort of a race to the bottom in terms of work quality. And, that might be fine for some sort of low value legal services, but what I've sort of consistently tried to write in my articles is really like this, a big part of the secret sauce here is like a lawyer's judgment and experience. And I don't think that that is conducive to a pricing war on sort of what is the cheapest way to deliver an NDA, written by an LLM.
Okay. It's going to come as we walk through. It's going to come, I think, to some as a surprise when you say that you're not great at dealing with some of these new techs or incorporating some of these new techs. But perhaps that says something about AI,
I think it does.
and the ability to use it. No, you start your piece with sort of a day in the life, talking about how you use it in the context of in that piece, late negotiations in a deal. I want to talk about the tools, but perhaps you could walk through that so people just get that kind of general feel for just the how this really does implicate and affect day-to-day practice.
For sure. So I mean, it's a little bit hard to do that because AI is really infused into almost everything I do at this point. I think one of just sort of the images maybe I can give listeners here into sort of how transformative it is like most lawyers, I used to spend at least 4 to 6 hours a day in front of Microsoft Word, and I don't do that anymore. My primary modality for actually doing work is now my Claude desktop app. Still client intake tends to come in through email. I don't know if that's going to change soon. It might not. But in terms of where I am sort of thinking about what legal advice I want to give, what edits I want to make to a contract, how I'm analyzing sort of a counterparty's comments, drafting documents from scratch, whether those are sort of like, corporate, just commercial contracts or transactional documents in a venture deal. That really all at this point happens mediated by AI, and with a pretty intense scaffolding I've built up of what are called skills and plugins that are specific to the way, I want AI to work for me. And sort of to go back to your earlier comment, that all sounds sort of more impressive and complicated than it actually is. This is incredibly intuitive technology that I just sort of iterated on myself until it worked. And this is something I really do think that most lawyers will be capable of if you sort of are able to get the right mindset about this. But it's really everything from trying to figure out how to respond to a request from a client, doing legal research, making edits to contracts, drafting contracts from scratch, going back and forth in a negotiation. All of this is sort of mediated through very powerful AI.
Okay. Now, speaking of sort of teaching it, let's get into a little bit of that. You talk about how Claude has three different modes. Can you talk about what they are, and then notably how you teach them, so to speak, so that it works for your practice?
Yeah, I think before I get there, maybe it makes sense to just talk about sort of why Claude in the first place. And I made a claim earlier that a few months ago, there was an inflection point in AI that makes it differently useful than it was before. For people who are less familiar with AI, maybe it makes sense to get the background.
Sure.
So I think what a lot of lawyers and people in general might be missing is when they think about AI, they are more or less thinking about ChatGPT and specifically sort of how ChatGPT looked in 2023 when it first came out, which is a much better version of Google. It'll give you information really quickly. It can do some cool parlor tricks in terms of writing a poem about putting a peanut butter and jelly sandwich into a VHS. But it is very prone to hallucinations. It can't do complicated tasks. You can't really feed it a Word document and have it format things. And so, and I think there's a lot of skepticism by lawyers of the technology industry. I think this is a blind spot in law and a sort of a reflexive view that, oh, this is all hype. Now, in the last 3 years and really more in the last 3 months, the biggest change that I've seen to AI and really what allowed me to do what I'm doing now is from this company, Anthropic, which makes a AI called Claude. And Anthropic's differentiator in general is they have a view that if they're going to compete in this AI race, they want to make their AI really good specifically at writing software, because writing software is one of the things it takes to improve AI. And if you can get good at writing software, then the software, the AI can write software to make itself better, and then you get eventually this sort of recursive self-improvement loop where the AI makes the AI smarter, and that's how they pull ahead in the AI race. In 2025, I started hearing from, I work in the tech space, from my software engineer friends that Claude Code, which is a product from Anthropic, which is really meant for software engineers to be able to write code with Claude, had gotten really incredibly impressive and was really stepping up their productivity. But in order to use Claude Code, you have to open up the terminal on your computer, which is like if you've seen the movie The Matrix, it's that really complicated thing. And I'm bad with tools. That was just way beyond what I was going to do. In January of this year, Claude released a desktop app that had Claude Code. And after months of software engineers telling me, listen, you can do this thing called vibe coding, where you just speak words into Claude Code and it will build software for you. It's like, okay, this is now easy enough. A user interface that I can try and do this myself. And so I began with sort of a vibe coding project. I was able to create a sort of a dummy website and some applications, and that was really impressive. But for lawyers, again, it's not intuitive why that would move the needle. The sort of next step is Anthropic built this AI model called at the time Opus 4.5, or now onto Opus 4.6, which interacted with Claude Code and worked in some ways like ChatGPT. You could talk to it and it would function like a general purpose LLM, but could also kind of write code on the fly to do things. And the real sort of first aha moment for me was Microsoft Word, where I spent most of my day, is a program on my computer made of code. The fact that Opus 4.5 and Claude Code could get together to write code on the fly meant that it can directly manipulate Microsoft Word on my computer. So I could come up with a list of edits I want to a contract. I just send it to Claude, and then it writes code on the fly in Python and XML to perfectly edit a .doc file. And replace the work that I would have to do painstakingly myself or ask a associate to painstakingly do in terms of inserting changes, double checking them, formatting, checking citations. All of that now just happens with Claude writing code. So that's pretty cool. So that was sort of step one. Step two, in terms of what Anthropic did, is they released through Claude Code and then through another product called Claude Cowork, the ability to read and write files directly on your computer. I guess this is a subset of it being able to write code. And specifically, there's a type of file called a markdown file, which is just a very basic text file that is easy for AIs to read. But allowing this has some pretty remarkable abilities. First, it dramatically increases the memory and context that an AI has access to. Memory and context is incredibly important because if you're going to be a lawyer who uses AI, you want the AI to know all of the stuff it needs to know in order to be able to help you well, right? It needs to know about the client, about the matter, about the correspondence so far. And like the more of that context and memory an AI has, the better. The problem up until this point, and probably some of your listeners will have had this experience of, you have a chat with ChatGPT or with Claude, and you feed it more and more information. But at some point, it actually gets less useful. The memory starts degrading, and you start getting out sort of hallucinations or slop or bad stuff. The reason for this is a concept called a context window, which is sort of the native memory of AI. And it's currently set at around a million tokens, which, I'll spare you the technical details mostly because I don't understand them. But the AI runs out of memory. When you're able to have AI read and write to external files, including these markdown files, you can use these local files as supplemental memory, right? You can put a book into an AI and it can read it all at once and analyze it. And so that's really not a constraint on what the AI has access to. It's the local memory in the LLM that is the constraint. So the first big unlock of having access to reading and writing files is you've taken the context window for the LLM from very limited to functionally unlimited by you can keep all of the relevant context in these external files, like an external memory brain for the LLM. So that's number one. Number two is you can point an LLM at now just like folders of files, right? This is what Claude Cowork does. And it can ingest a huge amount of context from lots and lots of different documents, which is pretty incredible if you're doing doc review for litigation, if you're doing diligence for a corporate matter. The UI is increasingly like if anyone has seen sort of the movie Her, when Joaquin Phoenix installs the OS for the sentient AI, it sort of reads all of his emails and reads all the stuff on his hard drive and says, okay, I think I know how to help you. That is increasingly the experience of what working with Claude Cowork is like. And then the third part of these markdown files is that they can serve as standard operating procedures for how the AI does the stuff you want it to do. So I know this is a lot and it's going to continue to be a lot, but I want to sort of give the roadmap. Backing up a little bit, there are two parts of the secret sauce to being good at modern AI. The first is, I think, an area where sort of legal tech is going awry, which is focusing on the wrong thing. A lot of sort of legal tech tools focus on training AIs on very specific sets of documents, right? Like SEC filings, legal briefs for litigation, contract templates for corporate work. Maybe that's fine and maybe a little bit useful if you want the AI to be able to spit out briefs or contracts that look like your firm's template. But the truth is, the underlying LLMs have read the entire internet. They have lots and lots and lots of examples of briefs and contracts. That's not what is lacking here. The big difference between an AI that performs well and that performs poorly is not the output, it's the input, it's the prompt you put into it. So the first thing about being really good at using AI is having good prompts. And that starts with being detailed and specific. Back to this concept of context, right? If you give an LLM, which is sort of a fuzzy technology, if you give it a fuzzy prompt, if you give it the one sentence prompt that most lawyers are currently doing, you're going to get fuzzy, sloppy output that's not useful. However, if you're sufficiently in detailed with what you ask of it, and these should be very long prompts, right? For complicated assignments, my average prompt length is about 2,000 words. I am writing an essay into Claude, right? Not a well-structured essay. I'm like mashing my hands in the keyboard and free associating about everything I think the AI should maybe know about this. Then what comes out of it is magic because it really knows everything and it thinks hard and it crafts something that meets all of the parameters that you've put in. So step one is getting really good at prompting. Now, step two, back to our markdown files, is once you have a sufficient library of conversations back and forth between you and Claude. Anthropic has built this capability based on these sort of markdown files that Claude can read and write called skills. Skills are standard operating procedures for how to get specific tasks done. And so Anthropic, the company that makes Claude, put out a 33-page PDF on how to build custom skills that seemed a little bit intimidating, and I wasn't, I don't have the attention span these days to read a 33-page technical manual. But I didn't have to. I gave it to Claude. I just pasted it into Claude and I said, look at the last couple of months of our chats back and forth, look at all of them, and tell me, based on this document, what are the five most useful skills you think you can build for me, and explain how they're going to make my practice better. And so, like, it noticed that I was using Claude, like I described before, to manipulate Microsoft Word, to add changes. It's like, okay, sometimes I make this mistake in coding, right? I know you like track changes to be attributed to you. I know you want me to double check citations if we're doing, I'm just going to encode this all into a skill for you. And so then when you say, please edit this contract, it has all of that context and it knows all of the instructions I would have given it anyway. Oh boy, is that like an accelerant in terms of productivity once you have these useful skills. And I think part of the important part of the story I just told is not that, like, look, I do actually think my skills I built are really good, but the more important part is they were custom to me. They were based on the AI's analysis of how I had been working with the AI and how it thinks it can help me best. And it created those skills. And once the skills were built, and I know this is a long monologue, so I'll stop after this. The last part of the secret sauce here is I use my practice as a, in tech terms, a reinforcement learning environment for those legal skills. So if I use a skill and something like goes well in an unexpected way, I'll stop and I'll say to Claude, look, this went really well. Let's think about like what worked here. Please update the skill so this thing happens more often. And if something goes poorly, if it makes a mistake, I will stop and say to Claude, hey, this didn't go so well. Let's think about why this broke and let's update the skill so this thing happens less often going forward. And so this compounds the usefulness of these skills over time just automatically. And so now I have this library of skills that match all of the tasks I do on a day-to-day basis that just automatically get better over time to the point where, again, like I throw in a Word doc or PDF, I say, please fix, right? Just and it just does it perfectly because it's been trained so specifically on the environment of like what it knows I specifically want.
That is for many going to be both incredibly exciting and frankly pretty overwhelming because you described a lot there. I mean, in a sense, you've talked about sort of the development of Claude that has sort of opened the door to some of the kind of uses that you're talking about, and then the essential role that both prompting plays and then the development of these skills that enhances a lot of what you're doing. Can we find a way to let's take this down to sort of back to that sort of day-to-day practice. So you've built all of that. And people are going to have to go back and I think learn for themselves some of the things you've just described. But once you've sort of had those building blocks, sort of what comes next? How does this then become operationalized, let's say, in terms of legal practice?
I guess maybe the easiest way to describe this that will be less intimidating is I treat Claude the same way I would treat a mid-level to senior associate. And I mean both in terms of the work that I delegate to it and in terms of how I interact with it. When I give a contract to Claude to review, right? Let's say I've gotten a red line from, opposing counsel on a deal. I will give that to Claude, right? Just like I would give it to an associate. And the instructions I give Claude are very similar to the instructions that a partner would give to a, mid-level or senior associate across the desk in a big law firm in terms of all of the context about the client, what the client cares about, some issue spotting I've done on my own. Please, think about how to deal with XYZ in the language. I know the counterparty isn't going to accept this term, so let's not bother with that. But maybe we can narrow the language here to avoid the liability. I will give sort of everything that I could think of to tell to a human as part of the prompt, right? The prompt out of the gate is not, please review this contract. It is the full suite of instructions you would give to a human and more, right? A good mental model for LLMs is like they're genies, but they're kind of stupid genies, right? So they will grant your wish. You just have to be really specific in the wish and leave no room for error or ambiguity about what you mean. And then, I put in those set of instructions and then it thinks for about 4 minutes and then it spits me back a marked up document exactly like an associate would, on average, better quality than I could hope for with a high priced mid-level or senior associate. It's like 95% good. Once I have a skill set up, right? So the process I was describing before to sort of automate all of the pre-instructions I would give, The difference there is it needs less prompting from me. So if it's, if there's a garden variety contract where like I trust the LLM's judgment based on all of the sort of background I've given it over the months about what I want in a contract review, I can just say review the contract and it'll do that. But the important thing is to think about this, somewhere between a human, I guess, and a very dumb, very literal genie. And that's how you should be talking to it.
Okay. I mean, that's quite interesting. That suggests that it's not just the individual, the lawyer, the user, that gets better over time and in better understanding the AI and what the prompting looks like, but the AI gets better too, through the better skills and the like. And so
Yes.
there's that correlation between the level of sophistication in the prompting and the development of the skills, that the better things get, the better the skills get, and that can lighten the load a little bit from a prompting perspective.
Absolutely. Now, I would like to call out one maybe uncomfortable implication of this, which is the skills really do genuinely compound in usefulness over time. And they allow you to work better and faster and deliver better quality, less error-filled work product to clients more cheaply and more easily. And so, like the sort of like K-shaped like delta between people who figure this out and start working in this way and the people who are like burying their head in the sand is also going to like compound. And so, I feel so strongly about like, the gospel of how to do this, because I think this really is an awesome opportunity for lawyers to like cut it. Like my job is so much more joyful than it used to be, right? I'm not doing the grunt work anymore. I'm not even delegating the grunt work. The like instruction that I used to have to give to an associate for how to do something I didn't want to do is actually more cumbersome now than the instruction I have to give to an LLM to do it faster and in many cases better. That's awesome. And like the lawyers who figure this out, I think are going to just find that they have superpowers. But you kind of got to get started now because the usefulness of these tools compound and they compound for specific users based on the specific user's need. And I worry that like a couple of years, it is really going to be hard for people who don't start soon to catch up with the people who have been compounding during that period. And I specifically worry that like lawyers who use tools like Harvey and Legora that don't allow for this type of compounding are going to have the opposite problem where they sort of become too reliant on the harness of those tools. And if anything, like their work is easy to automate away because, best believe like Harvey is watching like what you're doing in Harvey and seeing if they can replicate that with software.
Oh, that's such an interesting observation, that that reliance on those sort of more bespoke type of services for the legal profession may actually ultimately undermine the long-term competitiveness of the lawyers themselves. You've started down the path that I wanted to get to, which is, what does all of this mean for the legal profession? You've highlighted a little bit just now in terms of, you think the competitive advantages those that use this for AI, but this conversation, I think, will, for some, will sound both futuristic and more than a little scary, to think that their practices can be so transformed. What are your thoughts on where this leaves the legal profession and the ability for people to compete and new people to enter into the profession?
Yeah, I get so at the outset, I get the reaction that this sounds both futuristic and scary. I 100% understand how maybe it sounds like I'm a crazy person, and I'm describing some sci-fi future. I do want to just underline here, for what it's worth, everything I'm describing is not my take on what the legal practice is going to look like in the future. I am describing verbatim in as much detail as I can what I am doing now. And this is how the technology exists and works today. And I will acknowledge there are probably not a lot of people doing it exactly the way I'm doing it yet, but I promise you that the capabilities are here because I'm using them now. And in terms of scary, like I get it, the stakes are really high. I started writing articles on, X, formerly Twitter, because I could sense that there is this like real anxiety, both in the law and in the broader sort of economy about like what is AI going to mean for the white collar world. And I get it. There is going to be like very serious job displacement and transformation. And sort of there were sort of two articles that went viral before mine. One from Matt Schumer called "Something Big Is Happening," sort of warning non-software engineers that like there is going to be transformation in jobs. The other, a sort of more finance-related research article from Citrini Research, you know, sort of painting a doom case for how everyone's going to lose their job and the economy is going to crash. And I wanted to provide a like a sort of realistic but more optimistic view on what this technology can mean for knowledge workers, right? I know how I think it's going to look for lawyers, but I think this generalizes beyond lawyers, and the reactions I've gotten to my writing go beyond lawyers, right? Definitely to, you know, consultants, accountants, doctors. It's been really interesting to see that. The big law leverage model is not going to survive this. It's not going to survive the next 5 years. Just definitely, it's not. That's not to say that big law isn't going to survive, or that big law isn't going to thrive, or that big law isn't going to figure this out. I think all of those are very possible. You know, and I'm having conversations with multiple large law firms about how they can do things similar to how I do it. But the idea that like the profits of big law firms are going to come from a, you know, throwing an army of junior to mid-level associates at, you know, due diligence in corporate matters and doc review and litigation matters at $1,000 an hour to do grunt work, that's just not realistic at all 5 years from now. And so the business model is going to need to change. Another thing I have very high conviction on, individual lawyers who are both good lawyers, right? This is not just about being a technologist. Like you need to have the core skills of a lawyer, but who also understand how to leverage AI are going to have superpowers of the kind we have not seen in the law yet, right? There's long been in the sort of technology world this idea of the 10x engineer, that if you hire the right engineer, you can justify paying them a huge amount of money because they are just so much more productive than your average engineer. And in law, like the economics of, you know, who gets paid the highest salaries, right? Putting sort of like contingency fee cases to the side, we mostly pay people for sales, right? The Rainmaker partner is paid because the Rainmaker partner is bringing in valuable clients. And that might be related to the Rainmaker partner's ability as a lawyer, but they're not really a one-to-one function. And, you know, even if you have the like absolute best superstars in big law, their abilities have to be filtered through a team of people who are sort of executing on their vision for a litigation matter or for like a corporate transaction. That's not going to be the case. Like you're going to have the ability, like even if the technology doesn't really get better at all, based on the current state of the art with LLMs, with some maybe additional tooling built around it, a single lawyer might be able to do a very complex litigation matter or a very complex deal. Because at the crux of it, right, like what you're paying for that superstar lawyer is to exercise judgment. Right? It's to make the hard calls. And there aren't necessarily that many hard calls in a giant bet the company litigation than a smaller litigation matter. There aren't necessarily that many more hard calls in a $1 billion financing versus a $1 million financing. What's different is the amount of paperwork, and the AI is really good at the paperwork. And so I think the like economics of what lawyers, individual lawyers can deliver, right? This idea of called the 10x lawyer, I have very high confidence that like that is going to be new and different. And, you know, what I'm less confident is like, are these 10x lawyers going to live inside the current incumbent big law firms, or are there going to be different firms that are built around them? I could see either being the case. I could see both being the case. And then one other sort of, you know, more high confidence prediction I'd make is I think there's going to be, you know, when you take these two things together, I think there's going to be sort of a hollowing out of like the middle of law. The sort of routine, lower value contract review work, I do think that's going to be a race to the bottom in terms of cost. And that's going to be more and more just the technology doing its thing, right? Some version of the skills I've described building can be codified into software products. And like, yeah, maybe you have like a licensed lawyer check the box at the end, but the AI will be so good that probably, you know, it's just going to be like a liability mitigation thing. And overwhelmingly, the work is going to be done at the lowest possible marginal cost by the AI itself. And then I think at the high end, you're going to have these 10x lawyers who are going to be paid maybe more than ever for their judgment because, you know, they themselves can summon, right, all of the briefs and contracts they need to be able to properly advise their high stakes clients. This sort of middle, like, you know, part human judgment, but it's not very high value labor. Like, I think that is going to be a more sort of difficult part of the market, and that is a lot of the market right now. And so I think that like we're going to see a lot of rearranging of how sort of the legal profession works around that.
Okay, interesting. Two last questions, if you don't mind. One, you managed with that last question to highlight at least a couple of the other articles that you put on X or Twitter regarding judgment and the 10X lawyer. I'll link to all of those in the show notes. They're all worth reading. I'm curious, to what extent did Claude play a role in doing that kind of writing? Asking as someone who does a lot of Substack and blog posts and sort of constantly dealing with the tensions of just how much can you invoke some of these AIs for that kind of work?
You will be shocked to hear that Claude did play a role in all of those pieces, in helping me organize my thoughts and helping me shape some of the prose. Now, I will say, like, it's funny. There are people who are, mad and sort of putting in a slop detector or whatever. The irony of like my piece about how to effectively use AI, that I would have used AI in helping to write that. All of the stuff I said about my legal practice also applies to sort of AI-assisted writing, right? And look, I think this is going to matter for all professions where, writing is involved. Context is important, right? If you read the pieces I wrote, right, I'm taking, if I may say so, like pretty nuanced, detailed positions that like you're not going to get from an ordinary prompt into AI, right? If you ask AI, like, and I invite anyone listening to this, like, try and ask Claude or ChatGPT to write an essay, you're not going to get output like I'm getting. So you do actually have to really think through all of the ideas you want to get across. You have to think through sort of the emotional tone and narrative arc of like how you're trying to describe them. All of the things that are important in writing, all of the like hard cognitive labor of writing, you still have to do if you want to get good writing, except for the like mechanical prose generation. And so, these things have multiple drafts. The prompts are very long, but I am able to put out, I think, just better writing and more detailed writing than I could on my own because I am. It's not like I'm putting a prompt in, getting an essay, and posting it. But like, I am using all of the tools at my disposal, including like I now have a pretty like good long form writing skill that I use, and it like has examples of authors' prose who I like, and it has examples of like how I want to make different points and like my nuanced views on things. And that is all, to reference one of my pieces, right? I talk about both sort of the idea of a centaur, the person who knows how to use AI to augment their specific capabilities, and this idea of, I wrote a piece called The Age of the Entrepreneur about using AI inside large organizations. And one of the pieces there is really about encoding judgment. Like, how do you take the things that are unique to you and inside your head and turn them essentially into AI software? That's a big piece of my writing process as well, is like building the tools that help me write to get the output I want. But anyway, long-winded way of saying, yeah, yes, I absolutely use AI in the drafting, but it's more complicated than it sounds.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that, and I'm glad you went through that complication. Why don't we close with this? You provided some projections in terms of where things may head and the implications that it has. For someone listening to this, where do they start? If someone's listening to this and saying, okay, you know what, I'm convinced I need to get on this train, what would you suggest that they do? Because, this will feel, I suspect, to some pretty intimidating when they hear about all the different kinds of things that they've got to pull together to get to the point that you're at. What are those first baby steps that are needed?
100%. I would use Claude specifically. This is subject to change because this technology is changing very quickly. But right now, I think Claude is the best tool out there. I think you can probably start with the $20 a month one, but you really want to, for legal work, you want to be using the Opus model, which is their sort of smartest AI, and you're going to probably run out of credits for that very quickly on the $20 plan. So realistically, probably you want the $100 a month plan for Claude. I don't worry yet about Cowork for first steps. Don't worry about Claude Code at all. I don't think that's relevant to most lawyers. Just use regular old Claude. Use it for more tasks than you think you should. Use it specifically for the hardest stuff that you do. Now, again, we haven't really talked about privilege and confidentiality. That's a whole other conversation, but do your due diligence on that for sure. Like, every lawyer has their own duties of confidentiality towards their client. At the very, very, very least, if you're using this for anything remotely related to legal work, you need to turn off, and if any paid version of ChatGPT or Claude, you can do this, you need to turn off the ability for the AI lab to train their model based on what you type in. That's just a setting that you can get in the app. Anyway, start with Claude. Probably you want the $100 a month plan to be able to like really get the best out of this. Use it for hard stuff. Use it for lots of different stuff and see what it's good at and what it's not. And start with long, detailed, and importantly, very specific prompts, right? The step one, like really, this is a two-part secret sauce at a high level. Part one is long and detailed prompts, and the prompts are the magic. If you put in long, detailed instructions that give all the context the AI needs, you'll get much better results than if you do short, declarative prompts. And then number two, once you've gotten good at that, right, step two is using your own legal practice as a reinforcement learning environment to encode your judgment, your practice into skills. And you don't really need to learn how to do that. You can just ask Claude, right? And if really at any part of this feels exhausting or complicated or too hard, you can just ask the AI and it's generally pretty good at pointing you in the right direction. You know, back to my earlier point about like, I hate learning tools. There's not dashboards you need to learn. There's not different functionalities or workflows. It really is just dictated by the plain English conversation you're having back and forth with the AI. So this doesn't need to be so intimidating or complicated. You just need to be detailed and specific and keep asking questions until it works.
Okay, Zach, this is just so interesting. I know we could go on for a long time walking through, but you know, this is a great, I think, starting point both to understand how you've gone about doing this, the kind of capabilities, and how others can learn from what you've done. So thank you certainly for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbytes@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbytespod or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo Lebron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose Lebron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.